Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
The droning of moose filled the night air as Rex took another hit of his cigarette. His marmalade-hued ember burned as bright as the morning sun. Dusk was setting in, and it was time to take the cows back to the barn. The wind swirled like whirlpools, surrounding and fluttering Rex's linen shirt. After throwing his cigarette into the dew-blanketed grass, he started to direct the cows in the direction of the barn. Rex was a farming man. He lived with his wife and 2 kids in eastern Washington, about 40 miles east of Wenatchee. Rex led a simple life, living mostly off of what the Mars-like terrain could muster. The occasional visit to the general store supplied his family with the little luxuries, such as toilet paper or the new Superman comic. Rex's son, Tommy, wanted to be just like his father, and was set to inherit the farm one day. Rex's daughter, Mary, wanted to be a schoolteacher. The cows meandered into the dark and damp barn, huddling close together to shield from the cold November air. As Rex shuffled back to his homestead, he gazed up at the stars. There was little light in his town, resulting in beautiful galactical arrays projected into the night sky. The floorboards of his waterlogged patio squished and creaked as he shuffled to his front door.
"Father, did you get the mail?"
Tommy asked. "Not today, Tom. Say, will you go to town with me tomorrow? I've got to get a new hoe. Plus, there may be a surprise in it for you," Rex replied. The smile that waltzed across Tommy's face gave a calm pleasure to Rex as he retreated to his small study. Rex's study is where rest was had. Tobacco was smoked and drinks were drunk. In the corner of his study stood his most prized possession, the Cream Edison phonography machine, crafted by hand more than 30 years prior. As his music began to play, Rex sunk into his recliner and closed his eyes. The measly amount of light from a singular candle gave the room a calm atmosphere. Rex began to fall asleep. Rex awoke to a blood-curdling scream from Tommy and Mary's room, and then heard an even louder scream from his wife, who was now crying herself. Rex leapt upward unconsciously and began to sprint towards his kid's room. When he arrived at the door, he saw his 2 children and wife huddled in the corner of the room, pointing towards the window.
"What the hell happened?" Rex asked.
"They said they heard whistling. I tried to calm them down, but then I heard it too. We saw someone out there,"
Rex's wife, Sally, replied.
"Stay here. Don't make any sound. I'll be right back," Rex whispered.
Rex bolted to the closet and grabbed his rifle, along with a boot knife. Still in his long johns, he peeked through the door with his eyes down the iron sights of his rifle. He did not see anyone. He stepped outside into the cold night air and started to walk towards his barn. In the distance, he saw a moving light drifting farther and farther away from him. It looked as if it was a lantern, bouncing up and down violently as if someone were holding it while running away. He called out to the figure.
"Don't you come back! You come back here, you get a bullet between your eyes, you hear?"
Rex yelled. The light stopped moving. Rex repeated himself. Now that the light had stopped moving, Rex could barely make out a cloaked figure holding the lantern. The faceless figure stared at Rex for about a minute before turning around and running the other way. Rex fired a warning shot to hasten the mystery figure. After about 2 minutes of standing there, Rex went back into his house.
"Well, there was someone out there,"
Rex told his family.
"Who, Father?"
Mary asked.
"I don't know. But they're gone now." "Let's go to bed," Rex replied.
"Can we sleep with you tonight, Father?"
Tommy asked, voice trembling. Just tonight, Rex said. The family huddled into bed and laid quietly, thinking about what just transpired. As the fear began to drift away, the family fell asleep. Rex awoke, nearly falling off the bed, his arms sore. It was 6 a.m., and work was to be done. As he brewed a cup of coffee and prepared some eggs for himself, he noticed that the barn door was slightly ajar. He rushed outside in an instant with his revolver in his coat pocket. Rex came upon a scene so ghastly that he could barely keep composure. In the middle of the barn lied a skinned cow that was still alive. The cries from this cow sounded like no other animal, and it wailed as the sharp pieces of hay injected into the bare, bloody skin. The other cows were causing commotion, clearly distressed. Rex quickly grabbed his revolver from his coat pocket. He shot the cow once in the head. It screamed even harder. He shot it again. Still, it was alive, screaming even more. He shot it 3 times in the chest next. Still, the cow was somehow still alive. Nearly crying, Rex went outside the barn to grab his axe, still stuck in an oak stump. An adrenaline burst allowed him to free the axe from the stump, and he drove it as hard as he could into the middle of the cow's neck. That did the trick. Covered in blood, Rex lets out a wail. After sitting for a moment and reflecting on what had just transpired, Rex inspected the barn for further evidence of whatever was going on. In the back stable of the barn, Rex noticed that words had been painted on the wall. It wrote, "Give children or death awaits." "What the fuck?" Rex asked to himself.
"Jesus, Rex, what did you do?"
Sally yelled from behind him.
"It wasn't me. It must have been that guy last night," Rex replied. "This looks like a ritual or something, Rex. We need to graft Sheriff John,"
Sally said with bewilderment.
Let's go to town. I don't want to leave you all here," Rex said.
Sally woke the children and gathered them into the Ford. Rex lit a cigarette to accompany his second coffee. He turned the radio on.
"In other news, the Department of Defense has listed new items that will be rationed. The long list includes steel, coffee grounds, and cigarettes,"
said a news broadcaster in a transatlantic accent.
"Now for your local news. Horror had stricken a small town in eastern Washington. Police said that last night a whole family was slaughtered brutally by an unknown perpetrator. Early details seemed to indicate that they were skinned and still conscious when police arrived. They all died shortly after reaching the hospital. Police do not have a suspect as of yet, but they are warning residents of the surrounding towns, Winterset, Sunland, and Clarktown, to stay inside their homes and report any suspicious activity to their local police department,"
the newscaster read. Rex and Sally looked at each other for a moment. It was a look of both terror and confusion. They looked at their children, who were playing tag in the back seat. Rex looked forward as they had arrived in Clarktown. He parked the Ford in front of the police department and got out of his car. On the porch, Sheriff John rocked in his wooden chair. A large clump of chewing tobacco stuck out like a hillside on a grassy plain.
"Sheriff, how are you?" Rex greeted the sheriff.
"About as fine as I can be, I suppose. About as fine as I can be, suppose. Heard it may snow soon, so I'll be getting the plows ready at about 3 or so. How about yourself?"
John replied. "I wish I could say better." Rex looked at his family for a brief moment. "I came to speak with you about a man I saw rummaging around my land last night."
"Did you get a good look at him?" John asked.
No. He was wearing some sort of black cloak and running away from me. He stopped for a moment and I saw his figure, but then he started running again," Rex replied.
"Well, I wouldn't pay it no mind. Probably some teenagers trying to pull a prank or something. Could be one of Tommy's friends or something,"
John said calmly.
"I would have thought that as well, until..."
Rex paused for a moment.
"Until what?"
until I saw what happens to one of my cows. I skinned alive. It took at least 10 shots, 3 to the head and 7 to the stomach. It wouldn't die. I finally had to use the axe to lob its head clean off. That's not all, either, Rex whispered. What else? John asked excitingly. Whoever did it left a message. It said, "Give children or death awaits," Rex whispered. There was a long pause as John and Rex looked at each other with bewilderment. Neither was breaking the silence as they thought about the next course of action. I guess I could have some guys stay there with you for a couple nights. Do you think they could sleep in your barn? John asked. It sounds like a good idea. Whoever this is, I think this is more than just a prank, Rex replied. Rex and John shook hands and Rex left out the door. Upon entering his Ford, his family began to ask him what just happened. They're going to send out some coppers to stay with us for a couple of nights. They got big guns and they'll keep us safe, Rex said confidently. The family all breathed a collective sigh of relief as the key turned the ignition over. Rex looked up in the sky and saw dark gray clouds. It was going to snow. It was just a question of how many feet. He hastened home to start chopping wood to survive the night. Perhaps he thought John's men wouldn't be able to make it. That would be the worst possible scenario. As night began to fall and the stars started glistening, only crickets could be heard in this snowy night. Silence had blanketed the town, along with a healthy helping of snow. Fog began to develop on the windows of Rex's cabin, and bright yellow candlelight painted the window against the dark and cold night. Sally was with the children making a pie, a cherry pie. Rex was in his study, thinking about what to do if the man comes again. In his head, he counted. 1, 2, 3, 4. We have 4 rifles. Tommy can handle 1, probably. I could carry the revolver and a rifle. 500 rounds of ammunition. In the midst of this mental counting, Rex's heart sank when he heard a call from Sally.
Down to the last candle, she yelled. Save it. It isn't the darkest yet, Rex yelled back.
Rex had forgotten to get more candles. What good would 500 rounds of ammunition do if you cannot see your target? Internally, Rex felt a fear that was almost primal, a fear that was shared by cave dwellers who encountered large-toothed tigers in the dead of night. A fear that was ominous, almost as if the worst had yet come. A black mass of fear festered in the depths of his stomach and in the forefront of his mind. It was just past 8 p.m., 3 more hours of being awake, then daylight would come in no time. Rex tried to calm himself down as he went through possible scenarios. He dashed over to the window to see if John's men had arrived. They had not. Now they were late by almost 30 minutes. Stay calm, he thought. It's the snow. It's taking them extra long because of the snow. But deep inside the recesses of his thoughts was a dark voice that whispered to him his family's fate. Death awaits. Those words were laid in his head 1,000 times, each time louder and more ghastly. Rex sat down and placed his hands together. God, I do not know what will happen tonight, but I feel very fearful. Please protect me and my family. Please protect us, Rex whispered to himself. Right then, Rex heard a familiar call.
Rex, come and eat. The pie is cooled and ready, Sally yelled. Just a moment, Rex replied softly,
knowing Sally could never hear his reply. As Rex stood up from his chair, he looked outside the window one more time to see if John's men had arrived. They hadn't. Let's all pray, Rex said as he sat down at the table.
Father, we never pray before eating,
Mary replied. I know, but tonight is different, Rex sighed, explaining no further.
The family linked hands, and Rex began to say a prayer. Lord, here before you are two adults, a mother and a father. Here before you are two lambs of your doing, my son and my daughter. Tonight I ask you for your holy protection over my family and I. Protect us from the evil spirits, O Holy One. A tear began to roll down Rex's cheek. Amen, the family said quietly.
Father, what happened in the barn this morning?
Tommy asked. I had to put down Mushi. He broke his ankle and was suffering in pain. Rex replied quickly.
Father, what does awaits mean?
Mary asked. Rex looked at Sally and then back at Mary, his brow furrowed.
Where did you hear that word, honey?
Rex replied.
I read it in the barn. It said, give children or death awaits. What does awaits mean?
She asked again. It doesn't mean anything, sweetheart. I wrote that there. It's just a Bible scripture I was trying to remember when I was painting the barn. I didn't have a pen and paper handy, so I just painted it on the wall. I'll paint over it when I'm done. Rex lied.
I've never seen that in the Bible, Father.
Tommy said, with confusion. It's in the family Bible. I haven't read it to you yet. When you become a man, I'll read it to you. Then I'll give it to you to pass on to your own kids one day. Rex said with a smile.
I can't wait until I become like you, Father,
Tommy said. The pleasure felt from hearing those words almost made Rex forget about the impending doom that hung over his head. His smile faded slowly as he took another bite of his cherry pie.
The policemen are here,
yelled Sally. My prayers were answered, Rex thought. Rex ran outside to greet his protectors. Two big, fat police officers hobbled out of their Ford, the tip of their beards almost frozen from the cold.
Are you Rex?
One of the fat police officers asked.
That's me, Rex replied. Well, I'm Rick. This here's Frank.
Hello,
Frank said stupidly.
Hello, Frank. Well, let's not beat around the bush. I'll show you the barn, Rex said.
The three men trekked through the foot of snow 30 paces to their left, towards the barn. Once inside, the men took their gloves off and began inspecting the scene.
Wow, that's a lot of blood there, Rex said in amazement.
That's what happens when you skin a cow alive, Rex replied.
Shit, you weren't kidding. This is fucked up,
Frank said.
Well, check this out, Rex said, pointing to the back corner of his barn. Read over what it says, said Rex quietly.
Give children or death awaits, Frank said out loud. So what, you think this is some pervert or something trying to scare you?
Could be, but would some pervert go through all this trouble? Rex asked, already knowing the answer.
This reminds me a lot of the case out in Shelton. You know what I mean?
Rick said to Frank.
Yeah, some sort of deal,
Frank replied.
What do you mean? Asked Rex.
You never heard of the Whistler?
Frank asked with wide eyes.
No, never, said Rex.
Story goes like this. Out in Shelton, there was a guy living about 2 miles out of town with his family. The guy kept to himself. He owned a small lumber collective. One night, while out on a walk through the fields, he heard a strange whistling. He paid no mind to it, as it was probably just the wind. Next morning, he wakes up to the same whistling, but louder this time. Must be a weird cricket, he thought. Well, that night he went into his barn to find one of his milk cows skinned alive. He had to shoot the thing about 15 times before it finally perished. Poor thing. Fella got freaked out and decided to lock his family in a room for the night. He sat on his porch with a shotgun. In the dead silence of night, once again he hears the whistling. This time it's almost deafening. Almost as if it was done millimeters away from his eardrum. And just like that, it stopped. He heard some commotion in the house and ran inside to inspect it. In that room, he found his wife skinned alive with her tongue cut out. His children were missing. He shot himself on the spot. They never found out who did it, Rick said with a crescendo of sadness. How do they know that the guy didn't just go crazy and kill his kids and wife? Rex asked.
We thought that over. It's happened in 3 cities in Washington. And some say it happens in California as well,
Frank said. They all stood in silence for a while until Rex finally broke it. Well, holler if you need anything, Rex sighed. Will do, they said.
As Rex shuffled back to his home, he heard an unmistakable sound. A faint whistle. Almost as if it were miles away. Rex awoke to a deafening whistle. He looked to his side and his wife was sleeping soundly. He covered his ears in pain and terror. He ran to his children's rooms, only to find them sleeping soundly as well. The whistling abruptly stopped. He ran out to the barn and opened the doors.
Kill me!
Frank screamed at the top of his lungs. He was now pink, having been skinned alive. Next to him lied a dead Rick, who had a stake driven through both of his eyes.
Fucking kill me!
Frank screamed again. Rex pulled out his revolver and shot Frank square in the head. For a brief moment, Frank stopped screaming and stared over at Rex. He was able to muster out a couple of words before croaking.
Just give him the children,
Frank whispered. Rex kneeled over his dead body and began to sob. He grabbed a can of gasoline from the side of his barn and began to soak the bodies. He lit a cigarette, took a couple of drags, and then tossed it on the bodies. The barn began to catch on fire as well. Rex ran into his cabin to alert his family. First entering his children's room, he awoke them violently and yelled for them to gather their things. He did the same to Sally, whose initial anger subsided after realizing what was happening. In just 5 minutes, the children were in the cars with their suitcases, and Rex was the last out of the door. He took one final look at his homestead. It was ironic that he was the very man who built this cabin, and now he was going to have to watch it collapse in flames from his rearview mirror. They set out without a destination in mind, just anywhere away from here, thought Rex.
Father, it's been 2 hours. When will we stop driving?
Tommy cried.
This actually seems like a good spot, Rex said with urgency.
What are we doing, Daddy?
Mary asked with a tuft of fear.
Your mom says I need to be more spontaneous.
Rex looked over at Sally with a fake smile.
So I've decided we're going on a surprise camping trip,
Rex said with a false excitement mixed with dread.
How fun! Can we hunt rabbits, Father? Please?
Tommy yelled with excitement.
Of course, Tommy. But one thing that we have to remember, okay? No one can know we're here,
Rex said sternly.
How come, Father?
Mary asked.
Why would we want anyone to know about our great camping spot, little Miss Mary?
Rex replied.
All right, team, let's get this tent pitched and the fire going. It's going to be a cold one tonight,
Rex said, rubbing his hands together. The children began pitching the tent while Sally gathered dry sticks for kindling. Rex took out his revolver and set out to hunt for the night's supper. This time to himself also allowed him to think about possible plans of action. He was leaning towards just up and leaving. Sheriff John would never believe his story, he thought. He would be hung as a cop killer.
Montana. Yeah, Montana. No one's out there,
Rex thought to himself.
I'll just tell the kids I got another job. The boss won't let me take it unless I'm there pronto. They'll believe that,
Rex thought.
Rex?
Said a voice from behind the trees.
Yes, Sally,
Rex replied.
What happened to the barn?
Same thing that happened to Moosey. I had to shoot him in the head to end it,
Rex whispered.
And the other one?
Sally said with dread.
already dead. What's the plan?
Sally asked hastily.
The plan is we're going to Montana. I can't go back there. They'll think I killed them, Rex said.
We can explain it, Rex. John knows you too well to think that of you,
Sally pleaded.
No. If they saw what that thing did to those men, they would want to murder anyone responsible. I don't want to be mistaken for that, whatever the hell it is.
Rex yelled while still whispering.
And what about money, Rex? What the fuck are we going to do for money? How will we eat, Rex?
Sally yelled.
We will make do. I'll find a way. I always have, Sally.
Rex replied with passion.
And what if it follows us?
Sally whispered with darting eyes.
Impossible. It never saw us leave, Rex whispered back.
We don't know that.
I suppose we don't, Rex said.
Sally and Rex walked back together, hands linked in silence, held within their hands with an undying love for each other and their children, as well as collective fear for what is to come. When they arrived at the campsite, they looked at their children as they played together.
I got you,
Mary yelled.
No, you didn't. I have a super shield ability. You can't hit me,
Tommy yelled back.
Not fair. Daddy, Tommy's teasing,
Mary yelled with sadness. Sally and Rex did not reply to their children's calls. They only stared at their creations. The innocence, the naivety, the kindness, warmth, all illustrated through their children. How loud would they yelp if skinned alive? Rex thought. Does this thing want to kill them? Or worse, thought Rex. He closed his eyes for a brief moment and sighed. It's getting dark. Let's call it a night. Sally, you and the kids are going to sleep in the tent. I'm going to keep watch for the night, Rex demanded.
Can I help, Father?
Tommy asked.
Tom, you're going to be the man of the tent while I watch over you. Keep your mother and your sister safe. Tell them funny stories and extravagant tales. Use your imagination. In the morning, we can hunt for rabbits all day. Got it? Rex said quickly.
Yes, sir,
Tommy said with his tiny hand horizontal to his forehead. Rex leaned closer to Sally and whispered into her ear. Check for me in the middle of the night. If I'm not sitting right here, get the kids and run. Run until you can't anymore. Then find help. I'm going to leave a gun in the tent for Tommy, Rex whispered, giving a kiss to his wife's ear after speaking. She looked at him with tears streaming down her face. With a nod, Rex leaned over to Mary.
Little Miss Mary, well, how do you do? Rex asked with a smile.
I'm scared, Father,
she replied quietly with her head down.
Why, honey?
Because I'm afraid of that man. Will you keep us safe?
Mary pleaded.
Little Miss Mary, I will be here all night protecting you. I'll be like the Queen's guard.
And you know what? Rex said.
What?
Mary replied. I will probably never even have to use this thing. He smiled, pointing towards his rifle. Mary smiled and Rex tussled her hair. He told them to get in the tent, and they did. Rex perched himself down towards the fire, using its massive flames to light his cigarette. He grabbed his mug and poured some of his finest whiskey. His gun was perched against his chair, ready for a moment's notice. In his head, Rex began to recite an old nursery rhyme his mother used to tell him. If a boogeyman should come at night, when you're tucked in bed without a light, eyes like saucers give you such a fright. If a boogeyman should come at night. Rex's eyelids began to grow heavy. He began to drift into slumber with the warm fire roaring next to him and the whispered prayers from the tent. Rex awoke to his eardrums nearly bursting. The whistle had almost turned into a disembodied scream, growing louder each second. Grabbing each ear and nearly pulling them off, Rex screamed as his head was banging in pain.
Make it stop! God, make it stop!
Rex burst it. Rex collapsed to the ground on his knees, sobbing violently. He looked upwards towards the tent and saw the door flap was fluttering in the wind. He let out a guttural yelp that sounded like it came from Lucifer himself. Anger, fear, dread. All of these words do not even come close to describing the state of his mind. He began to crawl out towards the tent, his tears creating rivers in the soil. When he finally made it to the door flap of the tent, he couldn't bear to look inside.
Little Miss Mary, are you there?
Rex sobbed so violently the words almost sounded like gibberish. He pounded the ground with such force it gave him upward momentum. Rex lifted himself up to his knees and began to peek behind the flaps of the tent. Inside was a ghastly sight. Sally laid there, skinned, still alive and begging for her mother. Rex shot her in the head quickly without looking. He had to take her out of her misery. After killing his wife, it had dawned on him. The kids were missing. Rex stood for a moment in silence. He began to cry even harder. With the little energy he had, he lifted the pistol up to his mouth and stared forward. Behind the fluttering flap, he saw a black cloak. The wind finally blew the flap open, revealing the Reaper. The man's white face hurt Rex's eyes. He pursed his lips and began to whistle. Rex clenched his fingers, the hammer firing with an orange flash. His body falls backwards, right next to Sally.
In other news, a family was found brutally murdered in what the police think was a murder-suicide. Police are reporting that wanted fugitive Rex William took his family on the run with him after killing two Clark police officers. Hound dogs finally picked up William's scent this morning, leading them to, according to the responding officers, one of the most disturbing scenes he has ever seen. William's wife was skinned alive. William's two children were found about 300 paces away. Both were skinned alive as well. Police said that right next to his wife's corpse, Williams decided the guilt was too much to handle and shot himself once in the temple. It is safe to say that Clark has never seen an event as gruesome as this.
Richard turned to another channel, one that was more upbeat.
Wow, what an awful man,
Richard's wife, Molly, said in disbelief. Certainly not something you want to hear when you move to a new city, Richard replied. Richard settled in his chair, drink in hand, marveling at his new home.
Honey, can you stop whistling?
Richard asked.
What?
Molly replied.
Can you please stop whistling? I'm trying to read.
Richard said more sternly.
I'm not whistling.
Last month, I astral-projected by accident and had an experience that shook my beliefs about reality to their very core. It literally kept me up at night, and so I figured I'd post it here. The post was called, I Astral Projected by Accident, I Want to Go Back, and was removed by the mods because it didn't meet their criteria. Ironic, because it left me sleepless. But I understand why. It probably wasn't no sleep material for anyone who didn't experience it personally. If you'd like to read about it, I'm reposting it here because it's a fairly short read, and it'll give a bit of insight into what you're about to read. February 4th, 2019. There comes a time in your life where your wide-eyed curiosity evaporates. Giant holes appear in conspiracy theories you used to believe as a child. You realize that it's unlikely ghosts exist. The idea of an afterlife starts to become hazy. Perhaps even your faith in your religion becomes spotty, in not so many words. You can grow out of these notions, and many do. The power your mother or father held to check under your bed, in your closet, or in the basement is now in your hands. You're rational. Things like ghosts, vampires, and demons don't exist. My name is Dan, and until a couple of nights ago, I was living in that state of relative fearlessness. We're born, we live, we die, and nothing magical or extraordinary exists within our brief lives. Well, I'm here to tell you that there is something else. It's all around us, actually. Our cerebral radios, as it were, just aren't capable of tuning into whatever it is under normal circumstances. In the same way you and I can't hear a dog whistle, but a dog can. There are things we can't see until we've transcended our human boundaries. Shed our flesh, essentially. It happened to me Monday night, February 4th, 2019. My friend Bobby and I had been planning this night for a week. We got a bunch of snacks and grass and drove out to this amazing cliff not too far from his sister's place, where we planned to crash for the night. Before driving home in the morning, we sat out by the cliff just stargazing and talking about anything and everything. It was absolutely stunning. He wanted to take a quick nap in the van before we took off for his sister's place. We got in the van, and he put his seat back and started snoozing. I was getting sleepy and figured I could catch a few Z's. My high was wearing off anyhow. I leaned my seat back, started to doze, and that's when it happened. Felt totally at peace. All of my needs were met. I wasn't worried about a thing in the world. I opened my eyes for a moment and realized that my head was nearly hitting the top of the cabin. I looked down at my body and saw that I was floating out of the top of my chest. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Normally I would panic, but I just didn't feel as though anything was wrong. I started to float through the top of the van in the absolute twilight that lit up the sky was something I'll never forget in all my life. Euphoria washed over me, and my body was cleansed in the naked, unfiltered breath of the universe. I floated higher and higher, still as I passed through different celestial levels. It's the only way I can describe it. And I felt absolutely whole, as if I was one with the heartbeats of the world. And then I felt dread. I don't know why, but my euphoria was sucked away suddenly. I went blind, couldn't see a thing. But the things that I heard, it sounded like bees, buzzing bees, but through a megaphone. Different tones of buzz permeated the airwaves, and a great heat settled in around me. I heard what sounded like distant screaming among the crackling of flames. It was the opposite of what I felt before. I felt out of place. Everything was wrong. The world was a lie. I was next in the slaughter. These thoughts were my own, but somehow weren't. And then, silence. I heard a faint voice not far away from me say, "Look at this." I tried to call out, but I was voiceless. "It doesn't belong here," another voice said from the opposite direction. "Let's help it out," was the last voice I heard before I felt a force on both of my shoulders. I felt myself sink. I sunk through that void of screams and agony before I felt myself slip back into euphoria. And in just a few more moments, I felt normal. I slipped through the top of the van and into my body. I woke up and took a huge breath. Felt as if I hadn't breathed in ages. My friend woke up and saw me gasping. He must have thought I went insane when he saw me tumble out of the van and stare up at the sky. I told him everything, and I think he believed me. But the truth is, I really want to go back. I want to go higher. I want to speak to whatever's up there beyond the screaming void. I've never felt so human in my entire life. I don't know how I did it, but I'm going to try to replicate it, and my friend wants to go with me. Have any of you experienced something like this? Got any tips for sending me back there? Promise I'll come back and update. Well, against all odds, I made it back. I don't think I should be typing this, if I'm being honest. If the government already knows about all this stuff, and they find out I know about it too. Look, I'm just really worried about putting this information out there. But Bobby says he'll post about it if I don't, and his grammar is garbage. So, here goes. Ass rejected again. This time the both of us did. What I saw was so disturbing that I've yet to sleep soundly through the nights ever since. Every time I've sat down to type this out, I've failed to type for longer than a few minutes. I find that I have to get up and go stand on my balcony to breathe it out, and assure myself that I'm firmly anchored to reality, that I'll never accidentally end up back there again. Because for some reason, I felt that it's fishing for me. Screaming void. Like several hooks are dangling down from the void, waiting to snag me and take me back. I have to assure myself constantly that something like that can't possibly be the case. But after what I saw, it's hard to feel like anything is too far from the realm of possibility. Anyways, enough pretext. Sorry if I rambled. Bobby and I decided to recreate the circumstances as best we could without driving all the way out to his sister's. Both of us live in apartments, so we asked our friend Audrey if we could use her backyard to smoke and stargaze. She lives out in the middle of buttfuck nowhere, so we weren't worried about neighbors or police or anything. She sat outside and joined us for a bit before we started to get tired. We asked her to go inside because we had to concentrate, and she complied. We relaxed and tried our hardest to make it happen, but no luck. We put in to have our vacations at the same time, so we only had a week to make it work, so we decided to make some adjustments. Turns out there's this sleep center downtown where they'll put you in a sensory deprivation tank. We decided to give it a shot, intrigued by what we were attempting. Audrey asked to join us. We got high in the van before heading inside. We signed the necessary paperwork, giggling like idiots about what we were trying to do. But I felt more serious about the whole thing than they did. They explained the tanks to us. We were going to be floating on water, with a higher salt content for added buoyancy, well encased in complete darkness and isolated from anything that could make any sort of noise. I relaxed and tried to find that same state that I did before. The water was heated to body temp so that it created a little stimulus as possible. And after about a minute, I couldn't differentiate which parts of my body were submerged and which weren't. It was like floating through the vacuum of space, but warmer, I assume. I started to imagine the vast emptiness of space and found myself hallucinating. And then I heard it, a voice, faint at first. Couldn't make out any words. It was more like a mumble. For a moment, I started to think that this place sucked, and their rooms didn't have quality soundproofing, but the words were sometimes louder, suddenly softer. As if someone was speaking through a bad frequency on a walkie-talkie, I held my breath and listened intently as the words started to take shape, and the clearer the voice became, it was evident that it was a man speaking, albeit effeminate in tone. Overstepped. That was the first word that came through clearly. It was as if someone was standing in the room, but facing away from me. Boundaries, and half forced. As I listened, however, I felt completely at peace. Bliss had been throughout my senses. Will rain down on you with 1,000 years of divine fury. As this voice echoed into oblivion, I felt fear rising up inside of me and opened my eyes. In fact, I hadn't realized they were closed until just that moment. I realized where I was, and I had successfully astral-projected again. And that feeling of dread creeping over me meant that I was about to pass through that screaming void again. Darkness overtook my vision just as it had before. But the screams this time were distant, as if inside a building several hundred feet from me. Goddamn, is this that place? I heard Bobby's voice clear as day right next to me. The sound of his voice was accompanied by the return of my vision. I saw him standing in front of me, his back to me. Somehow we'd both projected together, the same place. I didn't think that was possible. The human mind is such an incredible organ, if it's even an organ at all. We're capable of so much more than we know, and there's so much more to spirituality than anyone knows. You can only know for sure if you really push. And even then, nobody will truly believe you about it because it's a seriously personal experience. But I had Bobby here. He was somehow seeing the same thing I was. Couldn't find anything online about anyone who had the same experience as Bobby and I. No, I didn't feel loose anymore. Nothing felt vivid or dreamlike. This felt real. I could feel my own body. Gravity still existed here, and the air was breathable. Whereas, when you're astral, you don't necessarily have to breathe. Now I'm going to do my very best to describe everything in great detail, because I don't know how many of you are going to get stuck in what I refer to as the screaming void. I surveyed a totally blasted landscape. The ground was cracked and barren, devoid of plant life. The sky was deep, dark red color with no clouds, but darkened to near black as it joined with the horizon. Thin layer of smoke permeated the air around us. Not enough to choke on, but enough to make us cough intermittently. The air felt heavy. Although I had nothing to be depressed about, a thick blanket of sadness hung over the both of us. There was another thing that was strange to me, and for some reason it's perhaps the most PTSD-inducing thing about the whole ordeal. Every so often, randomly, we'd hear a sound in the air. Sounded like someone was quickly pressing a few random keys on a piano. They were always low notes, and it was super brief. Sometimes a few minutes would pass before we'd hear it again. And sometimes, mere seconds. It wasn't predictable. I couldn't measure it. And for some reason it made me feel really uneasy. That's the only noise we heard over the sound of howling wind. Although there was no wind, the entire realm carried an extremely uneasy feeling within it that gnawed at you, down to your bones. You know that feeling when you hear news, and it makes your stomach drop? Dad was in a car crash. I want a divorce. You're fired. You failed your final. It was as if you were in a constant state of that very feeling, and no sense of discovery or wonderment about this new thing we were both experiencing together was enough to distract us from it. You see that? Looks like some kind of castle. Bobby son. I followed his gaze and looked out over the horizon. It wasn't easy to see because of the dark horizon, but sure enough, some kind of black spire raked at the sky. It was thin, but branched out in spiky angular protrusions. Furthermore, I noticed what appeared to be mountains on the horizon. Bobby, I don't want to be here, I said anxiously. Is there a way back? Yes, as he turned to me. As he turned, I noticed a black marking on his forehead that looked kind of like a semicolon. I admit that I reeled back a little, and he did too. We both pointed at each other's foreheads and talked over one another. What the hell? What does this mean? He asked as we got closer to one another. Hang on, he said as he licked his thumb and tried to rub it off of my forehead. No. Stuck on there, bro, he said. I tried the same on him, but nothing. Man, this is fucking weird. He now sounded as uneasy as I'd been feeling the entire time. How do we get out of here? He asked as he looked around. Try waking up, I said. Like when you realize you're dreaming in the middle of a nightmare and force yourself awake? The two of us tried, but to no avail. Dude, this fucking piano is pissing me off, I said as I scanned the horizon. He nodded. It's exactly what it sounds like. I just can't believe all of this right now. How did we even get here? I was hoping we would pass this place like I did the first time. I wonder how we messed up. We meandered around the area for a few more minutes before I noticed a second spire in the opposite direction of the first one we'd spot in. Eventually, the two of us decided that we might as well make way for one of those buildings. Maybe the same way I was helped the first time. Someone else could help us return to our bodies. Now, what I haven't mentioned yet is that we were both only wearing what we were in the tank with. So we're mostly naked save for our shorts. Gotta say, the ground didn't really feel great on my feet as we walked, but the feeling of dread just eclipsed everything else. As we got closer to the spire, I saw something that still haunts my dreams whenever I'm fortunate enough to sleep. I saw movement. Something was pouring out of the spire, and the cacophony of wailing screams and agony that I'd been familiar with beforehand grew in intensity. As the two of us watched, we quickly realized what we were seeing was a mob of what looked like human beings. They were sprinting in the opposite direction of the castle, each of them screaming as they drew closer. What the fuck? Bobby muttered as we started backpedaling. This mob wasn't slowing down. Finally, we started running in the opposite direction. As we ran, we could hear them gaining on us. I don't know how long we ran, but they sounded so close that I just couldn't stop. Then, I tripped. I fell to the ground hard and rolled around to see that these people were even closer than I'd thought. I scurried backward but just couldn't get any footing. I was trembling all over. I saw them up close, and while it was only brief, the images will last me a lifetime. They were naked, but lacked genitalia. They had no lips. Their teeth shone as bare as the paint on their twisted, mutilated faces. Their skin was a blight of open sores, burns, and lacerations. They were screaming at the top of their lungs as they tore across the landscape. I felt Bobby tugging at me and yelling something in my ear, but I was paralyzed with fear. It was too late. They were on us. And then the unthinkable happened. They passed us. The mob of wailing atrocities nearly ran us over, but they shot right past us. The smell was ungodly, and I could see bare bone on some of them as they passed. I could swear they were zombies. But I saw the emotions in their eyes. Fear, agony, confusion. These souls ran for a little bit longer before they started tearing themselves apart. Once they passed a certain point, they just violently dug into their own flesh with their fingernails and tore themselves to pieces. Finally, Bobby's voice broke through all the hell that I was watching. Dan, we have to get out of here. I found my footing finally. I got to my feet, and the two of us ran in the opposite direction. I looked over my shoulder a couple of times, but they seemed to have zero interest in us. They just stopped and tore themselves to pieces as fast as they could, as if their skin were a fire they needed to put out. We ran and ran, till their screaming died away in the distance. I have to imagine that it wasn't distance that did it, but rather they'd all torn themselves apart finally. All that was left was the howl of the wind that wasn't there, and that fucking intermittent piano noise. The two of us ran until we couldn't anymore and fell over. We lay there struggling to catch our breath in the ever-present layer of smoke. It felt like absolute hell. "The fuck?" Bobby finally called out. The two of us just laid there yelling for a few minutes as we struggled to breathe. I literally started crying. I'm a grown man, and I was weeping like a toddler. I felt better when I turned over and saw tears in Bobby's eyes too, but it was a fleeting emotion. If good emotions were a currency, I was dead broke. I just wanted to die. I'd never been suicidal in my life, but it was preferable to being here. "Bro, we have to get out of here," Bobby said as he got to his feet. "Let's go. We've got to try the other one." He was looking downrange at the other spire in the distance. In that moment, I realized that although I didn't want to go anywhere near another one of those, I would do anything to get out of that hellscape, even if it meant dying. The next part of the story is going to be really hard for me to write, harder than any of this was. I held up my end of the bargain to Bobby, and to the three people that read my first post. If anyone reading this actually wants to hear the rest of this horror show, type the rest of it, but this was hard enough to do. If not, spoiler alert, Bobby and I both made it back and we're okay. We're having a hard time sleeping and readjusting, and we have had random splitting headaches out of nowhere constantly, but we're alright.
To be honest, I've never been a particularly motivated guy. Sure, I made it through high school all right. I never was in any advanced classes or anything, but I didn't really get held back either. When it came time to apply to university, I sat around and watched as all my high school friends got into their college of choice, or second choice, or third, but me, I didn't get into anything. I fooled around going to the local community college for a while, but eventually my parents started nagging me to pull my own weight around the house. You see, my family was never really all that well off, and to be honest, even if I had gotten into a university I wanted, I don't think we could have afforded even a semester. So, yeah, I dropped out of the community college and got a job. For a while, I took any odd job thrown at me. I delivered packages, I worked on a farm tending to animals, I even did a little construction work for a while, but never could really hold anything stable. Eventually, I thought maybe getting closer to the big city nearby might help me find a more desirable job. I'd avoided moving that way before because the cost of living was insane the closer you got to the city. All those tech bros just kept running the rent through the ceiling. But there was one city within commuting distance which still had fairly affordable rent, if you were okay with the possibility of your place getting broken into and your car being stolen. I figured, what the hell? Not like I had anything worth stealing anyway. My most valuable possession was my last generation console with an outdated first-person shooter game on it. I figured I could weather a few thefts, so I took the plunge. For a while, things were looking up. I had gotten a place near the big city, I had a pretty well-paying and stable job at some hipster coffee joint in the city that seemed to think my rugged look was on point. I actually had some sizable pocket change for once, and to be honest, I really didn't know what the heck to do with it. That's when I discovered the big city's nightlife. I got so addicted to the clubs, the girls, and the drinking that I practically went out each night. Between the cost of drinking, rideshares, and late-night binge eatings, I barely left room for rent and day-to-day expenses. But somehow I just scraped by every month.
Jesus, Sean, you look like shit.
Amy, my co-worker, took a drag from her cigarette, looking me up and down with a mildly disgusted look on her face. We were taking a quick smoke break between the busy hours. I'll be fine. I just need another shot of espresso, I said, and gave a sheepish laugh. My voice was hoarse and felt all too dry. It was the telltale sign of another late night, screaming, "I love this fucking song," wasted out of my mind to some nameless girl on the dance floor.
"What's up with you lately?"
she asked. I sighed and took a deep drag of my own cigarette.
"You're just barely on time to work. The circles under your eyes are so deep I could mistake you for a panda, and you have this soulless stare when a customer comes up to order,"
she continued. I thought the soulless stare was part of why they hired me. "Isn't it very, on point?" I said. We both laughed.
"Yeah, I guess, but I'm serious, man. You can't live like this. It ain't healthy,"
she said. "Oh, it ain't, huh?" I said mockingly. Amy wasn't from around here. She grew up in the Midwest and moved all the way out here, leaving her family behind. She was following the dream to come tech macabre and get a 6-digit salary making obnoxious apps for lazy people. Occasionally, her Midwestern slang would slip out, and I'd tease her relentlessly. She groaned and gave me a death stare. Her thick black eyeliner made it especially intimidating. I decided to change the subject. "So, are you still taking that coding thingamajigger?" I asked.
"Hack Academy? Hell yeah," she exclaimed.
She balled her fist and shook it in a triumphant gesture, causing a few strands of her purple-dyed hair to fall into her face.
"I'm almost done, but then I'll be out of this job," she said.
She did a quick glance around to be sure no one else heard her, then gave me a knowing smile. "Good for you," I said. I threw my cigarette butt down onto the ground and stomped it out before heading back towards the shop to resume my shift.
"Hey, you could, like, not litter, you know?" she said.
"Yeah. Or I could just wait for you to come up with some app to get people to clean up my cigarette butts for me." I turned and walked away, lifting my hand in a lazy wave.
"Asshole,"
she said, barely audible. I glanced back and saw her bending over to pick up the butt I'd left on the ground. She was such a goody-goody sometimes. I went back to the shop. It was my turn on the espresso machine, so I zoned out and got into a rhythm of making coffee until the day ended. A few minutes into my walk home from the subway, I'd pass a giant church which seemingly been entirely made of wooden glass. During the daytime, it wasn't particularly special, but during the night, they would light up the interior, causing the pattern on the glass window to shine through dramatically. On my way home from work, I'd stare at it regularly, absent-mindedly. But this evening, while I was looking at it, I felt a chill down my spine. The image was always a little fuzzy and hard to make out, but what had once seemed to me surely to be Jesus with his halo suddenly looked twisted and wrong. I stopped walking down the street and stared at the image. What had once been a halo around Jesus' head looked unmistakably like ram's horns, curling off either side of his skull. What had once looked like a serene smile now looked like a twisted snarl. His hand, once formed into a blessing, now looked like a claw reaching out to me. I stared at the depiction of the church's window, and it didn't change. I closed my eyes and rubbed them furiously, and looked again. It still looked wrong.
"What's going on?"
I muttered under my breath while staring up at the church from across the street. I was broken from my trance when a woman squeezed past me on the sidewalk, avoiding me like I was an unkempt hobo shouting about lizard people.
I shook my head and realized how crazy I must look. Okay, I'm going home and straight to bed. I hurried past the church, glancing at the image a few more times, hoping it would return to its old image, but it remained haunting and twisted. I'm gonna go have a smoke. You want in? I looked to Amy, who was just wrapping up cleaning the espresso machine.
Yeah,
she said. Steve, you mind holding the fort? I asked to our other co-worker, Steve.
Yeah, sure. I'll stay at the register while you guys go ruin your lungs.
Alone. Again. He said with malice. Thanks, bud. I said, patting him on the shoulder. He gave me a cold glance and watched as we walked out of the shop into the alley out back. Steve's a real charmer, huh? I said to Amy once we'd gotten out back. Amy gave me one of her signature glares.
You should be glad he doesn't report us for taking so many smoke breaks, Sean, Amy said.
I looked up into the sky. It was a little overcast. People didn't have much coffee on days like this. It'd be a light day of work. Yeah, I guess. We smoked in silence for a few minutes.
Hey, you know that church that's over near where I live?
I asked, breaking the silence.
Which one?
The one that's practically all glass, the one near the lake.
I know of it.
Have you ever seen that image that shows on the glass at night?
Yeah,
she said, taking a drag.
What of it?
Did anything seem... I paused as I searched for words. Off to you?
Off how?
Never mind, it's stupid. Amy eyed me suspiciously. She wasn't one to leave good enough alone.
Spit it out, Sean.
Last night when I was looking at it, it morphed or something. It turned into some ram-headed creature. That full satanic shit, man. Amy started to laugh immediately.
Come on, Sean. You've been partying a little too hard if you think I'm gonna believe that cliche-ass story.
I'm serious, Amy. That's what I saw. Clear as day. Amy tilted her head and looked piercingly at my eyes.
You're really not joking, are you?
I'm not. Amy looked at me, frustration in her eyes.
You seriously need to take a damn break from all this wildlife shit, Sean. It's fucking with your head.
I guess. We finished our cigarettes in an uncomfortable silence. Neither of us knowing what else to say. I spent my entire shift thinking about that damn image of the church. I just couldn't stop seeing its evil snarl burned into the back of my eyelids. It was my night to close down, so I was leaving later than usual. I decided I needed a distraction. I was going out tonight. I went straight to the club after work. It was a Wednesday night, so the crowd was pretty lame, so I just ended up getting shit-faced and hitting on any girl with two legs. Eventually, 2 a.m. rolled around and the club emptied. As I stepped outside of the hot and steamy club, the cold night air felt like a slap in the face, making me nakedly aware of my own drunkenness. I looked around at all the other partiers, stumbling around and laughing a little. This was such a familiar scene to me by now, it almost felt like home. Then I noticed her. A girl in a pure white gown, blonde hair and piercing pale blue eyes, stood at the edge of the sidewalk in front of the club's entrance. She was staring directly at me. No emotion on her face. I looked around me, wondering if maybe she saw someone she knew, or someone was doing something weird behind me. But all the clubgoers had emptied out, and I was the only one standing there. She was staring at me. What the fuck? I strode up to her, full of drunken bravado. Do I know you? I asked in what seemed like a very impressive tone. The woman stared at me with her eyes wide and emotionless and said nothing. After a few long seconds of silence, without breaking eye contact, she reached a hand into the sleeve of her robe and pulled out a small white object that looked like a little credit card and extended it out to me. I stared at it for a moment, and then took it from her. I looked down at the card. It was pure white, solid, like some kind of hard plastic.
or maybe glass. In pure, solid black lettering, it read, Cathedral of Light.
You're from that church?
I started to ask, but as I looked up from the card, the girl was gone. I looked back at the card and flipped it over. The backside read, 3 a.m., Holy Repentance Service, in the same imposing font. I glanced around and noticed some other drunken club-goers were being ushered away by the club owners and decided it was my cue to go home. I slipped the card into my wallet and stumbled back to my apartment. The alarm on my phone beeped incessantly in my ear as I struggled to keep my eyes open long enough to enter my passcode to turn it off. I groaned as I crawled out of bed and downed some water before hurrying to get clothed and off to work. I showed up to work just barely put together, but on time. Amy was just opening the doors as I came. She shot a concerned glance at me, and I walked up.
Hey, Sean, I want to talk to you about something at our break today, okay?
She said.
Of course, I said.
So serious all of a sudden, I laughed. Amy shot me a look that said, I mean business, and continued setting up the shop for the day's work. When break finally came around, Amy and I went to our usual spots and I lit up. Amy did not.
So, I went to that church you were talking about last night.
My cigarette practically fell out of my mouth.
No shit, I said in shock. Why would you do that?
I don't know. Something about the way you told me about that just made me feel like I had to know.
So, did you see it?
No, well, yes, not at first.
She looked visibly shaken speaking about it.
Whoa, Amy, I've never seen you like this. You really saw it, didn't you?
Amy nodded.
Well, at least I know I'm not crazy,
I said. Amy laughed weakly.
I was staring at it, and I just saw the same old Jesus figure I remembered. And then suddenly it started to shift, just like you said.
She shook her head from side to side.
The horns, claws, and all of it was a straight-up demonic image.
Right? I said. I still can't get the image out of my head.
Yeah, it's almost like it burrowed in there.
Suddenly, last night's images came flooding back to me in bits and pieces, and I remembered the card. I desperately pulled out my wallet and searched it for the card. There it was, right where I'd put it last night, still ominous and pristine as the night before. Amy noticed and came closer to take a look.
What's that?
Get this. Some girl from the church handed it to me outside of the club I was at last night.
What? Like she was flyering or something?
I handed her the card to take a look at. She was, like, in this full white robe, like something out of the 1800s or something. And she just stared at me until I took the card.
What's this on the back of the card?
It beats me. Some kind of event for their weirdo religion?
This is some creepy stuff, man.
Amy handed the card back to me, and we stood in silence for a moment.
Wanna go check it out?
She said, breaking the silence. You know this is literally the worst idea possible, right?
Yeah, but I already can't stop thinking about this place since last night. You know how it is. I just gotta figure out what all this is.
I'm ashamed to say that I straight up bailed. I know I probably should have had her back or talked her out of going, but all I could think about at that moment was not wanting to have more to deal with. I guess old habits die hard. You can go by yourself, Amy. I'm not interested, I said coldly. She scoffed at me and walked off back towards the shop.
Amy, I didn't...
I stopped as she stuck her hand back and gave me a middle finger without stopping.
Whatever,
I grumbled to myself and lit up my cigarette before returning to work. Amy wouldn't talk to me for the rest of the day, and even Steve seemed to be sensing something was up, and he kept glancing between the two of us.
Amy left early, and Steve and I were cleaning up before he had to close the place down. "Lover's quarrel?" Steve asked. I laughed. "Who knows what's going on in that girl's mind?" I said apathetically. Steve and I finished up, and I headed home. I laid in bed for hours, but I couldn't sleep. I saw the creature in the church glass, the girl in all white, and Amy's cold stare. "Fuck!" I shouted in frustration. I glanced at the clock. 3:15 a.m. I punched the bed in frustration and got up, hurriedly getting dressed. The church was about a 10-minute walk from my apartment, maybe a little less if I speed-walked, but I was practically sprinting. My chest was pounding and something just felt wrong. A primal feeling of worry, something you just know but can't understand. When I finally arrived at the church, the creature in the glass was illuminated and towering above me. I tried not to focus on it as I circled the building looking for Amy. Before I could find her, I found a large double door, slightly ajar. A faint light seeping from inside the building into the darkness of the night. I slowly peeked inside. The building was dimly lit inside, except the glass wall where the figure was illuminated. Candles lined a walkway leading to a pedestal with a spotlight shining on a book. Something about the book drew me to it. Maybe it was just a natural instinct to approach light in a dark room. Maybe it was the mystery. Maybe it was something else. But I couldn't fight the urge to approach it. When I reached it, I saw that the book was in a language unlike anything I'd ever seen before. In the candlelight, the words seemed to shift and writhe on the page like snakes in a pit. On one page, a drawing depicted a dagger dripping with some liquid. I flipped through the pages frantically, each page filled with that strange language and more disturbing imagery. A loud clicking sound ignited my heart and made me spin around to look at the source. A long, laborious squeak sounded as a door opened slowly behind me, seemingly on its own. "Hello," I said. I meant for it to sound strong, but instead it sounded meek and timid. "Amy?" Nothing responded. I walked to the door. I could feel my body shaking. I was terrified. As I approached the door, I could hear a dull tone, almost like chanting. I pushed the door open to reveal a spiral staircase, dimly lit but with a stronger light flickering down below. I methodically walked down the staircase, and the chanting grew louder and clearer with each step. As I approached the bottom of the staircase, I could clearly hear the chanting, though I had no idea what language it was in. The first thing I saw when I made it to the bottom of the staircase was Amy. She hung in the center of a room. Her hands were tied on either side of a large wooden cross, her legs tied to the bottom. She was gagged and completely naked. Her eyes shot open in a mixture of fear and hope as she saw me and our eyes locked. I quickly scanned the room. Hooded figures in orange, their faces obscured, surrounded Amy. Several girls, like the one I'd seen before, only now they wore no white robes, danced, spinning and jumping in jerky, stilted motions around Amy. The hooded men chanted methodically in the otherworldly language. The chanting filled the room with a cacophony of deep booms and piercing hisses. I started to speak. The chanting stopped. All the girls in unison stopped dancing in mid-motion and turned, staring at me.
Amy?
I barely managed to squeak, paralyzed with fear. I stepped into the doorway.
"Repent and be reborn,"
they all chanted at once. I don't think they were speaking English, but suddenly I could understand the words. I tried to speak.
"Repent and be reborn,"
they repeated.
"Repent and be reborn."
It was then that I noticed the ornate dagger lying on a pedestal next to the cross where Amy was tied. Once I'd seen it, a flood of visions entered my mind. I saw myself the head of an empire. I saw possessions beyond anything I'd ever dreamed. People respected and aspired to be like me. Clearly none of it had happened, but they felt like memories. Memories of the future. Then, suddenly, my purpose was clear.
For the first time in my life, I was intensely motivated, and I knew exactly what I had to do.
Repent and be reborn,
they said. I walked towards Amy. She looked at me with hope in her eyes.
Repent and be reborn,
they repeated. I reached Amy and tears streamed from her eyes, her thick black eyeliner streaming as she stared into my cold eyes. Repent and be reborn, I said, as I grabbed the dagger and shoved it into Amy's chest in one swift motion. She screamed violently, even through the gag, as her eyes faded and the life flooded from them.
The ambitious fall,
the voices said in unison.
The strong shall rule,
they continued. I stared at the blood on my hands as the people around me slowly walked towards me in unison. It's been 10 years since Amy disappeared. After the disagreement we had in front of Steve, he suspected me. But after they found a note in Amy's apartment claiming that she just couldn't take the pressure anymore after failing to finish her Hack Academy degree, the police dropped the case as a textbook case of burnout. I'm a successful CEO now. I was able to come up with a highly successful social media website, despite my relative lack of knowledge, and use that fortune to build several other successful apps on that platform. I never worry about money anymore. Sometimes I check up on my old high school friends just to laugh about what their university degrees have gotten them. It's an amazing world we live in, where a relative nobody can become a world name just by creating a simple website, just by having the motivation to do what it takes. Thankfully, the high-pressure environments in my tech bubble means no one worries when every few years the ambitious new intern just stops showing up to work one day.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.